somehow we human beings relax when we travel to the ocean. The violence of salt water crashing onto the beach, we find that calming. But it's not just a pretty display. It's a process that constantly alters that zone where water meets land, processes that certainly will affect the land differently as sea levels rise due to climate change. Today's guest speaks on Friday evening in Coos Bay about shoreline erosion and flood hazards on the Oregon coast due to Earth's changing climate. Dr. Jonathan Allen is a geologist with DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and he joins us for this hour to talk about things we'll see, are already seeing, in fact, at the shoreline. Dr. Allen earned his bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. He completed a postdoctoral fellowship in oceanic and atmospheric sciences at Oregon State University, now again, of course, with DOGAMI, based in Newport. Jonathan Allen, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Much appreciated.
Let's start with the basic terminology here. Geomorphologist certainly makes the spell check warning light up on Microsoft Word. What does that field entail?
Basically, a geomorphologist is scientists who study landform changes, specifically looking at the processes that actually guide the changes in the landscape. And so it reflects typically a combination of areas of focus. One is understanding the underlying geology and the shape of the landscape and things like that, and then the other component being the actual processes that go about modifying that landscape.
It's not necessarily just a coastal endeavor then. I mean, you can check the landscape changing anywhere, can't you?
Correct. I mean, you know, there's within the field of geomorphology, I mean, there are folks who specialize in landform geomorphology, which is, you know, more specific to the inland areas, things like landslides and how that might modify landscapes. There are fluvial geomorphologists who look at changes within river basins and the associated flow dynamics within rivers. There are coastal geomorphologists like myself who focus out on the coast. It covers a spectrum of different landscapes and areas of focus.
Did a fascination with the Oregon coast itself and the fact that this can be a really interesting place to work, was that part of what drew you here from New Zealand permanently or semi-permanently?
Yes. I mean, I was very fortunate to have worked with a colleague of mine who's actually been a long-time researcher out here on the Oregon coast, a chap by the name of Professor Paul Comer, who came out here in the late 60s and really spent his life studying the coastal processes that affect the Pacific Northwest environment and has published extensively on the subject. And so he was a professor actually on my committee when I was doing my PhD back in New Zealand. And he actually visited us out in New Zealand, and I was fortunate to be able to work with him on a particular project looking at coastal changes. Actually, it was lakeshore changes in the south central part of New Zealand. And, following that, he provided me with the opportunity to come out here to Oregon to work at Oregon State University and work with him specifically on coastal-related areas of interest.
And there is obviously a lot that can be found interesting on Oregon's coast, given all the geology and everything else involved there. I see in addition to DOGAMI, you're involved with a couple of other ongoing projects that also have some lengthy acronyms. Can you tell us about NANUS and OBSMAP?
In about early 2000, I was invited to be part of a pilot study focused on establishing ocean observing initiatives around the Pacific Northwest coastline. And what stemmed from that was what we now call the Northwest Association of Networked Ocean Observing Systems, or NANUS. And NANUS is part of a much broader effort that is being funded by the Integrated Ocean Observing Systems through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. The focus of IUS and NANUS in general is actually looking at doing more region-specific studies focused on both the coastal, ocean, and estuarine environments around the U.S. coastline. And so NANUS is specific to the Northwest region. It extends from basically Vancouver Island up in British Columbia all the way down to the Northern California coastline, down all the way to Humboldt Bay. And so my specific project, there are 19 PIs involved in this particular study or endeavor here in the Northwest, but my particular area of focus was establishing essentially a coastal ocean observing system along the Oregon coast, basically using real-time kinematic GPS to go out and measure coastal changes at multiple locations up and down the Oregon coast. So we have multiple stations that we go back, and we use GPS to essentially survey and map the elevation and shape of the beach at multiple locations, and we do this 3 to 4 times a year, depending on which stations we're observing. And based on that, we can essentially pick up a picture of what's going on out on the coast.
We'll talk about where the stations are located, and they're fairly evenly spaced along the Oregon coast, both north and south. We're talking to Jonathan Allen from DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, about global warming and the erosion and flooding activity at the ocean as a result of that. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. When we come back, we'll return with Jonathan Allen and your phone calls and emails in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the geomorphologist, Dr. Jonathan Allen, who works for DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. He's based in Newport on the Oregon coast. We are talking about the effects of climate change on the Oregon coast as relates to things like erosion and flood hazards. In fact, Dr. Allen will be talking about shoreline erosion and flood hazards on the Oregon coast due to Earth's changing climate on Friday at 7 at the Hales Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. Free to the public. If you can't make it in person, you can tune into the college website for a live stream. That's socc.edu, Southwestern Oregon Community College, socc.edu. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the effects of climate change on coastal areas. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Dr. Allen, have there already been some opportunities to study what might happen to Oregon coastal lands when waves reach significant heights?
Yes. So we've been studying coastal change up and down the Oregon coast now for about 14 years in quite a bit of detail. A lot of my interest in what's been going on out here was really initiated or triggered by a series of major storms that actually impacted the Pacific Northwest in the late 1990s. And, as a result of those events, they generated extremely large waves. And in fact, when you, as part of the research that we delved into, it turned out that a lot of the storms and the large waves that were associated with those events were unprecedented, at least in terms of wave conditions over the last three decades. And we knew this from analyses of deep water NDBC, or these are National Data Buoy Center wave buoys that are distributed up and down our coastline. And so we could explore the conditions over multiple years, and see that these waves were quite unprecedented, and associated with that was they resulted in quite significant erosion up and down the Oregon coast.
Is that a fair test, though? Wave heights versus regular higher sea levels?
Well, I mean, we need to differentiate between, you know, two quite different sets of processes. On the one hand, we have the waves that actually work constantly along our shoreline, moving sand about, you know, anywhere from literally milliseconds to changes that may be occurring as a result of single events to changes that are occurring over seasonal cycles. These are just simply the variations in waves that occur between, say, summer when waves are much quieter to winter conditions when waves obviously ramp up in both energy and so on. And so that's one set of processes that are going on. Sea level, on the other hand, that's you know, basically governs the elevation to which the waves can actually reach at the shore. So, for example, I mean, if you have a storm that's occurring at low tide, then potentially the impacts may be much less than if that same event were to occur at, say, a high tide, or even during a spring tide, when elevations are much, much higher. And, you know, if that same storm could actually cause very serious carnage and damage were it to occur at that high point. And so when we start talking about future climate effects and specifically sea level rise, what we're really concerned about is the additional rise in water levels over the next 30 to 50 to 100 years, and the potential implications of that to storms and obviously the associated erosion.
We're talking to Dr. Jonathan Allen, a geologist from DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, about coastal erosion and flooding in the context of climate change. Here's Dennis and Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Hi. See, I have a question, and it's sort of probably not in the guest's wheelhouse, but it's something that I think that folks like him need to think about. My question is this. Without the politicians and the powers to be becoming willing to change their outlook on global warming, and without the public becoming willing to change their opinion, i.e. that they're apathetic and just don't either want to think about it or don't want to do anything about it, all the studies in the world is not going to change what's going to happen. And so I think that this guest's job really is to figure out a way, and all the people that he are like him, to figure out a way to convince the politicians or to convince the people who elect the politicians that we need to make some changes, or else we're just sort of doomed.
All right. Thanks for the outlook, Dennis. Appreciate that. So, Dr. Allen, I mean, is part of the reason for giving speaking engagements like the one Friday night in Coos Bay to just make sure that the public really knows what we're talking about?
Certainly, that's obviously a major objective here is to be able to, you know, present a lot of the updated information that we've learned over the past decade or so, not just from myself but from colleagues who have continued to specialize in similar sort of fields that I'm involved in, and present the results from these various studies. And so, you know, from that standpoint, you know, a major goal is definitely to inform folks about what is taking place along our coastline. I mean, as a state agency, we work very, very closely with both the public at large, but we, you know, in particular, we work very closely with local government up and down the Oregon coast. We work with federal agencies as well, and you know, our role is obviously to provide critical information that can be used both now with respect to issues that may be specific to specific needs that relate to, you know, homeowners, for example, struggling with a particular situation, or dealing with more broader issues that relate to, you know, for example, communities losing sewer treatment plants and things like that along the coast. And so we definitely play a significant role with respect to providing geologic information, but also making available maps of future erosion responses that planners, et cetera, can start to utilize and perhaps even use for regulation purposes.
Given that you are a state agency, as you pointed out, Dogami is an Oregon state agency. I mean, is there any flack for putting the information out there ever? I mean, or is that pretty well insulated? You're pretty well insulated from that, I guess I'm asking.
You know, my sense is that on the whole is that people actually welcome having good information, and I mean, I've rarely heard from folks who have you know really been concerned about. The types of information we put out there. I mean, we cover the spectrum of hazards within our agency. We're focused on all things related to earthquakes, to landslides, and tsunami. Obviously, is a big one, and people want to know what the likely implications are for these types of hazards and how they might impact not just themselves, but their entire community. So my sense is people are very receptive with respect to having good, sound information.
Dr. Jonathan Allen, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a geologist with Dogami, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries for the state of Oregon. We're talking about coastal erosion and flooding and how those hazards increase with Earth's changing climate. He'll be talking about that very subject Friday night at 7 in Coos Bay at the Hale Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College. You can join us here now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760 around the listening area. And you can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So back to the list of Oregon Beach and Shoreline Observatories. Are these spaced pretty evenly along the coast just to make sure you get a pretty good feel for what is happening and where?
Yeah, so when we first actually established these stations, I should add that you know prior to the establishment of the Oregon Beach Shoreline Mapping Program, a lot of our understanding of what was going on our coastline was, you know, being derived from aerial photos, from old surveys undertaken by folks in NOAA at the turn of the century, and really the objective behind setting up this particular observing network was to essentially develop a more systematic approach for documenting the seasonal to interannual to eventually long-term, you know, decadal type changes that may be taking place at different areas along the coast. So our initial focus was actually centered on the northern Oregon coast, where primarily up in Tillamook County, actually, where they were hammered pretty badly in these major storms in the late 1990s. And so we specifically set up a series of stations in along the Rockaway Beach Littoral Sound, which extends from Cape Mears all the way up to Neo County Mountain. It's about 25 kilometers in length, and we establish stations at roughly 1 kilometer interval. Since then, we've continued to expand our focus throughout Tillamook County, and then elsewhere up and down the Oregon coast. Some of the stations that we observe are, you know, very much project specific. For example, down on the southern Oregon coast in the vicinity of Port Orford, we were doing some monitoring work in early 2000 following major flooding and erosion issues along the Garrison Lake shoreline down by Port Orford there. And but that study was short term, and so we pick those stations up as and when we can find the time to get down there and continue to monitor what's going on in those locations. But they tend to be a little more ad hoc than some of the other stations that are more what I would describe as sentinel stations that are critical for maintaining this long-term or developing this long-term database of coastal change.
I did have a chance to peruse some of the clickable maps here with the Oregon Beach and Shoreline Observatories. And in fact, I did look specifically at the Port Orford imagery at the Elk River Spit. I wasn't quite sure what I was looking at because there are the aerial photographs and there are lines on there with bits of data at each point on the line. So are you pretty much cataloging what happens as the Elk River approaches the ocean at certain intervals?
Yeah, so I mean, down there we have transects. These are stations where we basically start at the most landward edge, and we use GPS, and we basically walk out across the dune and down along onto the beach, and we we do this multiple times a year, at least in that particular location. And then we have, and we have 23 stations actually down there that are spaced roughly 300 to 500 meters apart, so they're pretty closely spaced together. And the objective there is to understand some changes that are going on down on the Elk River Spit that are related to essentially dune scalping that's going on the, along the spit there. And that's part of a study that's being funded through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, where they're trying to reestablish the spit there to a state that was similar to what it was in the late 60s, which was a spit system that was subject to more frequent run-up and overtopping. Since the 60s, with the introduction of European beech grass, that particular spit has stabilized substantially. In fact, the beech and the dunes have built up substantially, and so effectively preventing the types of wave overtopping that used to characterize that area.
Go ahead. I was going to ask if it's a pretty common mistake, though, that we assume that that what white settlers saw and first might have taken photographs of maybe 150 years ago, if we make the mistake in thinking that this is always how this area was and that it would never change, and then build around it and think it'll be, just be fine.
And unfortunately, that type of perception is pretty common up and down the Oregon coast. I mean, if you... the most complete suite of photos of the Oregon coast were actually taken in the 1930s, 1939, specifically by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And it's quite staggering, to be honest, the changes that have taken place along our coastline. You know, areas that were previously broad, sandy dunes now are completely vegetated with beech grass and small, you know, alpine trees, you know, that type of thing, coastal trees, and have really completely transformed the landscape. I mean, in my view, actually, I think these types of effects have transformed the coastline so significantly that, you know, I don't think we'll ever, you know, get back to the types of conditions that we saw, obviously, 60 or 70 years ago.
Jonathan Allen's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, geologist with DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Here's Ann in Eugene. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you. So, you know, areas that are built up like the down on the sand at Walport, I call them tsunami estates. And we have various kinds of high-risk areas around the state, whether we're talking about flooding or wildfire or landslides. And counties have an incentive to let people build on anything because they get building permit fees and then they get property taxes. But they aren't running any risk because if the disaster, whatever it is, comes along, then it's the federal taxpayers, all of us, that end up helping these people out. So my plan would be that high-risk areas would be mapped, and if people want to build there, they could, but they would be excluded from any kind of assistance of money if their property is destroyed by whatever catastrophe comes along. Right. Of course, the people that have already done this, they would, you know, they would not be affected by this. But for future things, because we've just built a monstrous amount of high-risk property that can be destroyed at any time.
So build at your own risk. Thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate it. So what the information that is generated by you and people like you, Jonathan Allen, does this end up getting used by counties to make decisions about zoning? Or, I mean, the feds get involved here, too, because they do have floodplain issues as well, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, absolutely does get used by the various planning departments up and down the coast. You know, for example, the FEMA flood maps are used, obviously, to guide risk associated with building and developing in FEMA flood zones. There's a mechanism there for homeowners to buy insurance to protect their investments and so on. And obviously, organizations like ourselves have been involved in developing maps of a variety of forms, both landslides, tsunamis, coastal erosion, that can be used by those folks and insurance companies, etc., to guide development and choice of development.
But it's a case of putting the facts out there and letting the political powers that be make the decisions about how to use those facts.
Correct, and that's the biggest challenge, obviously.
All right, we'll come back and talk more with Jonathan Allen, geologist at DOGAMI, the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, about shoreline erosion and flood hazards on the Oregon coast due to Earth's changing climate. Coincidentally, also the title of his talk on Friday night in Coos Bay. More on that, more of your phone calls and emails, more with Jonathan Allen on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the geologist, Dr. Jonathan Allen, actually a geomorphologist with DOGAMI, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries for the state of Oregon. He'll be talking on Friday evening in Coos Bay about shoreline erosion and flood hazards on the Oregon coast due to Earth's changing climate. That'll be 7 o'clock Friday night at the Hales Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. But he's here now to answer questions and comments. 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Is there a cataloging going on of vulnerable structures, I wonder, Jonathan, at this point? Is that something that was within DOGAMI's purview, or is it more like you take a look at the zones and report back to the local building folks and say, you got some things in these zones?
So I guess a couple of responses there. One is that our main purview is actually to develop, obviously, the hazard maps, be it for tsunami or coastal erosion or landslide. And then one of the things we have started to do is working with other partners is actually try to better define the numbers and types of structures that may be in particular zones. We've actually been working with colleagues at Oregon State University on this with respect to coastal erosion zones up in Tillamook County on the northern Oregon coast, and just trying to get a sense of how many buildings are in potentially high risk zones, for example, what the dollar values are and things like that. So that's those are certainly examples of where these types of mapping products can be used to assist planners, and ultimately, they can use that to help guide for future development.
You mentioned the FEMA flood maps. I wonder, given what's going on with sea levels and everything, if the FEMA flood maps are updated more often than they used to be.
Well, actually, my agency and myself, in particular, along with some colleagues that I'm working with very closely with at Oregon State University, are actually in the process of revising the FEMA flood maps, at least for the open coastal strip along the length of the Oregon coast. And part of the impetus for that is actually stems from the events like Hurricane Katrina and Sandy that took place back in the Gulf and on the East Coast. And so there's certainly been a realization that coastal conditions have changed dramatically along the U.S. West Coast, and particularly associated with larger wave events and sea level's certainly been rising gradually and things like that. So as a result of changes in noticeable events that have taken place with respect to processes, improvements in both the data available to us now to develop these new maps, and also, importantly, new technologies, such as the collection of airborne LIDAR, which allows us to get very high resolution imagery, elevation information along our coastline. All of that really has been instrumental in triggering these new types of studies focused on developing new FEMA flood maps.
We have a number of questions here for you. Let's go to Don and Eugene first. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jonathan Allen from Dogami.
Oh, good morning. Just one question, really, and that concerns the relative difference between the uplift that we're experiencing, I believe that we're experiencing along the coast, due to the plate sliding under us, and versus the rising of the tide.
A good question, because I was going to ask about storms, but then I realized just within the field of geology, there are so many variables to consider because we have the Cascadia subduction zone. So this has to be considered in addition to things that are coming from the ocean side.
That's correct. And so there have actually been a number of studies that have looked at this particular issue over the years. The most recent was published in 2009, where scientists went out and actually did differential leveling at multiple stations up and down the Oregon coast and tied those surveys back to more stable benchmarks as, you know, control stations. And based on that, they were able to derive a map of the variation in tectonic uplift along the Oregon coast. And from that, we can then utilize sea level data from various tide gauge stations to develop a relative sea level change curve for our coastline. So, for example, if you look at the Oregon coast, essentially from about just south of Coos Bay down to into Northern California, that's an area where sea level, actually tectonic uplift, i.e. the lifting of the land, is occurring at a faster pace relative to sea level rise. North of Coos Bay, the reverse applies, where essentially sea level is occurring and rising at a faster rate relative to the land. And so you have this interesting pattern that seems to diverge somewhere between Cape Arago and Bandon on the southern Oregon coast. And again, the pattern sort of continues north up onto the Washington coast. So from all this information, we can certainly derive information about variations in uplift patterns, as well as, and then relate that to specifically to sea level rise.
Can I make the wild assumption that that south of Coos Bay, perhaps your danger is probably greater from earthquakes than it is from flooding, and north of Coos Bay, it's the opposite?
So it's. At this point in time, the indications are that certainly uplift is exceeding sea level rise, and so with respect to storms and so on, I mean the implications would be that that area is going to be, you know, in the short term less susceptible. However, when you start to look much longer term, the reality is that at least the modeling suggests from these global climate models that have been downscaled to more region climate models all point to an acceleration of sea level rise from about 2050 on. And taking those data into account would, you know, basically demonstrates that even the south coast will become susceptible to sea level rise in the future. It's just going to take them a little bit longer mm-hmm. when compared to the north coast.
I think I was reading that sea levels rose about 7 inches in the 20th century. What are the current projections for the 21st?
Actually, there was a really outstanding study that was done not too long ago. It was completed in 2012 by the National Academies. And their projections are that sea level is expected to rise about just under 3 inches by around 2030 for the central Oregon coast, increasing to about 7 inches by 2050, and potentially as much as 25 inches by 2100. But you have to keep in mind, you have to be aware that within these projections, there are actually quite wide uncertainty bands, meaning that there could be lower estimates, there could be higher estimates of what sea level is likely to do. And a lot of this is very much a function of what's taking place in areas much further from our specific region, specifically accelerated melting on the Greenland ice sheet and down in the West Antarctic ice sheet. Those areas will ultimately, you know, significantly influence rates of sea level rise in our area. So if they start to accelerate, then these numbers could increase.
All right, let's take a few more calls here. We have Jacob and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Jonathan Allen.
Hi, I want to ask about a curious feature on the Oregon coast. We have these inlet bays, you know, it's sort of like Wallapa, Coos Bay, and Westport in Washington. But it's a unique feature to the land here, and I think there has been some studies that shows this was due to, like, sudden earthquakes where the land, you know, sort of sinks, and now you kind of have, like, a swamp area and the ocean kind of flows in. And they also result in maybe massive tsunamis that, you know, ring through the Pacific Ocean and are recorded in Japan, like the Cascadia earthquake.
In 1700.
So, yeah, but these are acute geological events that kind of change the coast. And also they result in massive earthquakes, massive casualties from tsunamis, and, you know, affect the whole world, you know, all the way around the Pacific. So isn't a river feature leading into the, you know, the continental shelf sort of predisposed to these massive earthquake falls?
All right, let's find out.
What do you call those phenomena? I know it's something. I was wondering if the geologists have a term for that.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it, Jacob. Jonathan?
So one of the things about our coastline is that, you know, the land behind the coast is actually very steep, and we have many rivers that actually flow out of the coast range up and down the Oregon coast and obviously meet the coast, the open coast, at least at these open bays. And so in many respects, we have... a lot of these areas reflect old river channels that were downcut, thousands of years ago, that have subsequently been blocked off by the formation of sand spits, as we see, for example, down off Coos Bay there, the North Spit there, and characteristic up and down the coast. So that's one set of processes that are going on. There's another set of processes which the gentleman alluded to, and that's the occurrence of these large earthquakes that produce very significant tsunami events. And, for example, we've documented 19 events in which we've had or experienced earthquakes on the order of magnitude 9 or greater since about 8,000 BC, so over the last 10,000 years. The last major event occurred in 1700, January 26th. And... these events are, producing large tsunami waves very similar to what we saw in Japan in 2011. In fact, I mean, that's the analogy of what we can expect to see on our coastline at some point, in the future. It could happen at any point in time.
Let's go to John and Vanita. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jonathan Allen.
Good morning, guys. This might be a little bit off topic, but early... the gentleman was speaking of the wave height.
From big storms,
I've always been curious about that. I spent part of my growing up down in Florence. And then I seen a thing, my folks had this video, it was about the Coast Guard, and they were talking about the ocean. And they went everywhere, and they come around from northern, from like Maine all day around, and then they did Southern California, and then they skipped and jumped up to Alaska, and then they saved the Columbia Bar, called that the real dead man's bar, and our northwest coast as being the most vicious, scary place. And it scared me off the water. I don't go out salmon fishing over the bar anymore. But I'm really curious how big these waves were. They're out there away from any kind of topography in the bottom. It would be up creating some kind of disturbance or lift the water that was just from the wind and being built up.
All right. Thanks for the question, John.
So actually, prior to about the mid-1990s, the waves that were being measured by these various buoys. These buoys are measuring waves over about a 17-minute period, and then they're doing various statistical analyses on those data, and you know, what we end up getting is what's called a significant wave height, which is the highest one-third of the waves in that 17-minute record. And, you know, we can look at those types of data going back many, many years. And so up until about the mid-1990s, the estimated 100-year wave height for our coastline was around 10 meters, which is around 33 feet. In 1997, 98, and 98, 99, those two winters, we experienced the equivalent of five 100-year events. In other words, five events that produce waves equivalent to or greater than that original 10-meter estimate. In fact, the largest wave, significant wave, reached about 14.1 meters, so over 45 feet. And so a couple of points to keep in mind. One is that that's the average height of the waves in a 17-minute record. In reality, the largest wave or the maximum wave that could be in that record is about 1.8 times that. So potentially you could see waves reaching as much as 70 feet in these really big events.
Those are very big waves, and you can hear more about them on Friday night at 7 at the Hales Auditorium, Hales Center at Southwestern Oregon Community College in Coos Bay. Shoreline erosion and flood hazards on the Oregon coast due to Earth's changing climate. Free to the public, Dr. Jonathan Allen will deliver that, and he's been our guest today. Dr. Allen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Much appreciated.
It's great to have you. That'll do it for today's exchange. Find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. Find us on our Facebook page as well. Our producer and today's engineer, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.